And we're back. It's Lions Collective. We're live every week. Well, Wednesdays, Thursdays. Well, we got a special episode today. We're recapping. The fellas are going to help me do so. Detroit Lions mini camp. The crew is back. I'm your host, Jeff Ifredi. We've got Will Birchfield, Colton Pouncey, Justin Rogers. We appreciate you guys so much. Hit the like button, subscribe if you haven't already, and follow us on Twitter. Okay, we were talking before the show. If you're not following us on Twitter, follow it so you can see me show off my setup. Okay.
What's the account, Jeff?
It's at Lion. Is it Lions HMA? I believe. I'd have to double check that.
Perfect start.
Yeah, this is a disaster. It is Lions HMA.
I was right. You got it right. Trust your instincts. You had it right.
There you go. Lions HMA on X. But we got a lot to get to. Detroit Lions minicamp, fellas. I know you guys are kind of wrapping it up. Now, you guys are still going to do stuff, but it's your off season finally after the OTAs, minicamp, stuff like that until training camp. So congratulations to you guys for all the great work. But let's start off minicamp. Some of your guys' takeaways and just things like trending up, trending down. We're going to get to that stuff. But anything that stood out to you at minicamp?
Chuck Clark is the dude, man.
Yeah.
That's where I'm starting off. And like, look, it feels like you find like that one vet min, long in the tooth veteran that just kind of fits you every year. And clearly the Lions are in need of depth and potential starting help at safety. And I've mentioned this before, like, free agency preview, you kind of look for guys like that might fit, and Clark was one of those guys that I put down. And it's weird to me that this is a guy that struggled to find a home last off season, and when I talked to him a couple days ago, like, his phone wasn't blowing up, you know, despite a pretty decent season last year in Pittsburgh. Like, I think the Lions were kind of his first and only call, but he looked at it and goes, that's a situation I can mess with. He's quickly slid into first team reps, and it seems like, I don't even think it seems like it, it is a fact that this coaching staff kind of has an instant love for him. And I think what really stands out to them is kind of his alpha communication techniques, you know, this ability to be loud, to be right, to get guys on the same page. And, you know, really the question mark is, as Shep said, what is his limitations physically 10 years into his career? Well, you know, end of game situation the other day in practice, and who's stepping in front of a Jared Goff pass and ending it with a pick? It's Chuck Clark. And so, you know, I think we all looked at Christian Izzy signing as kind of the first man up in that safety room, but I would not be surprised if by the time we get to the end of training camp, like, Clark is that first option, both free and strong. I just think he has the ability to kind of do it all. But I walk away from this mini camp feeling really, really good about the safety depth they built. I thought it looked good on paper, and I think it looks really good kind of practically here in the padless part of practices.
Yeah, I'll say this for Chuck Clark, and then Colton, you can jump in. He definitely has a sort of all business, no nonsense demeanor that Kelvin Shepherd loves in defensive players. In fact, Kelvin Shepherd said last week, like, I haven't seen this guy smile once since stepping into the building, which probably paints him as like a little bit more austere or Spartan than he really is. J. Rod, you and I discussed this yesterday. He actually seems pretty friendly off the field, but
for sure.
You know, when I asked David Correo yesterday, or Jim O'Neill, safety's coach, has he seen Chuck Clark smile yet? He said, well, yeah, he smiled after the interception on Tuesday. So that was definitely a reason for the defense to celebrate. And look, that was one of three interceptions in practice on Tuesday, and they probably could have had four or five. So early on, signs of this defense, even while depleted, getting its hands on some footballs.
Yeah, I think the main thing with the safety position right now is that they've got options. I know it's been kind of doom and gloom with, you know, your starters out there. And, you know, I kind of watched, you know, Branch and Kirby a little bit after practice, kind of, you know, chatting. And, you know, you hope those guys can come back sooner rather than later. But, you know, in terms of what they have right now, it feels like they feel pretty secure with the depth that they've built from the moves they've made this offseason. And I know maybe the fan base doesn't really reflect that. But you get out here and you see Chuck Clark making plays. You see Christian Izian. And, you know, I think Lions fans have probably seen him from those battles with the Bucs over the years. Like, he's a guy that was trusted to play for that defense and Todd Bowles there in Tampa. So they've got some options. And the fact that we're talking about, like, you know, Thomas Harper, a guy that played a lot of football last year for the Lions, he's a depth piece right now with those guys kind of leading the way, kind of speaks to how they feel about that room right now. So I do think they're in a good spot. Just to throw out another name, a guy that I've been a little bit surprised at, like, with maybe the amount of reps that he's getting is Tyler Lacy. Yeah. You know, he's a guy that, you know, obviously he was getting a lot of time last year just out of necessity, but, you know, I didn't know if he would be the first guy out there, what that would look like, what that rotation looks like after you've made some moves in that defensive end room to address the depth. And, you know, he's playing that big end role in a lot of the packages that we were seeing out there and getting a lot of reps with the first team defense. And, you know, that might be subject to change when Derek Moore gets his feet wet a little bit and you get in training camp and the pads really go on. But in terms of where things are right now, it seems like, you know, they like Tyler Lacy a lot and trying to get a really good look at him right now.
Playing inside too a little bit. And like, there's obviously a gaping hole in the middle of that defensive line. And when I asked Casey Rogers about that yesterday and the pieces they lost in the middle, his response was, yeah, we sure did. And it very much remains to be seen based on his answer, who steps into that void. But, you know, they've experimented a little bit with Lacy in there. I don't think Tyleik Williams cuts the profile of a nose tackle. I'm not sure really anyone does on this roster who has significant NFL experience. So we'll see how that shakes out. But I've got like a broader take for you guys on spring practices and kind of what's or who's trending up. And hear me out here. I try not to make any grand conclusions this early in the season, and I won't. What I will say is that one of the hidden benefits of Drew Petsing's offense might be that it tests and sharpens Shep's defense in ways that John Morton's offense didn't, couldn't, and wasn't designed to. Like we've heard a lot already this offseason, or I guess this spring, from Dan Campbell about problem solving. Like that's been the theme, it feels like, of what they wanted to accomplish over OTAs and minicamp, was creating problems on both sides of the ball for the other side of the ball to solve. And he said, like, we're much further along in that department now than we were at this time last year. And then we also hear Campbell and passing game specialist David Shaw talk about trimming down the playbook to home in on the things they do well, but then also like layer nuances and twists on top of their core play. So kind of addition by subtraction. And when I asked Campbell about it yesterday, he explained it like this. We're doing a lot of the same things, but man, there's so much that's different. Same girl, different skirt. It's the shifts, the motions, the turbos, the stacks, the stack inverted. So the presentation for the defense is different. More bells and whistles was the way he ultimately described it. And to me, and I'm sure to you guys too, it harkens back to Ben Johnson's mantra of making the same plays look different and different plays look the same. And as Campbell said yesterday, one of the aims of this is to stress the defense, like to force the players on the field to think more on their feet, to come up with answers on the fly, to communicate and function as a unit. And it sounds and maybe even looks like it's working. So senior defensive assistant David Correo, who's been here for 9 years now, said yesterday that Petsing's offense is pushing the defense, quote, into the deep end of the pool right out of the gate. And he's putting pressure on us every day with shifts, motions, new alignments, new plays. And then it's already putting us into this mode of, this is what we're going to see from these advanced NFL offenses. And then safeties coach Jim O'Neill was talking about like the explosion of pre-snap motion across the NFL over the past couple seasons. And, you know, he said that's the whole Shanahan McVay influence, where players on defense are forced into positions they're not normally in, which demands flexibility and communication, like real-time problem solving from the defense. And he said, you know, all of that makes it harder on us as a defense, but with Drew, we get it before every play, which is great. We're seeing who can handle it and who cannot. So it felt like by the end of last season, and obviously some of this was injury related, Shep's defense was pretty rigid. Obviously they were playing tons of base. And then once the secondary was thinned out by injuries, it just kind of collapsed. And we already know they're going to play more nickel this year. He's made that pretty clear, but it feels like the overall vision is to be more flexible before the snap and then to be more fluid after it. And I feel like early on, Petsing's offense might help them achieve the latter.
The way you described it, I can't help but think of like a 90s movie plotline, right? Like you've got the plain Jane girl that the popular guy gives attention to, and they put her in some nice clothes and put her hair up in a ponytail, and suddenly she's winning prom queen, right? Like it's the same offense, it's the same pieces. It's really the same design. And it also makes me think of Ben Johnson, right? Like what was the core philosophy of Johnson? It was everything different looks the same. Everything same looks different, right? Yeah. And you would talk about this offense being very complex, but Johnson would go into a game plan a week with 20 formations, and then they would have 5 to 8 plays off of each formation. So it's just really difficult to lock down and decipher what they were doing. So now you take that, you start adding some, let me, a little bit of different personnel, you know, matching and pairing. You got some shifts, you got some motions that you're reading and identifying. And when you talk about it being really good for the defense, you know, the big thing that this, that Shep tried to kind of bring and introduce last year was this ability to check and audible for Jack Campbell and for the safeties. Very similar to a quarterback coming to the line with two plays in hand and kind of checking out of one if he didn't like the defensive look. That's what the defense is doing to the offense, right? If they're identifying something, they're trying to check to this second play. And I remember Campbell telling me last year, like with Goff, it was like a cat and mouse game where they were just checking back and forth four times before a snap. But if Petsing's forcing them to see more modern looks, if you will, it's only going to get those guys sharper, faster. It's going to accelerate the process. So that by the time you get to the games, right, the practice should be harder than the games. That's what you hear all the time. So if you get to the games and you've seen it all, it should make your defense look better by default.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed, and I'm glad the defensive coaches were saying that, because like I was kind of keeping track of my notebook, like all even during the walkthroughs when like you see the full collection of talent out there with Laporta, obviously participating in the mornings before, you know, kind of heading off the field there. But the eye candy that this offense is showing the defense, like every morning and every day that they're out there, they're really, you know, able to see the full picture. And when Tesla's out there and Gibbs is out there and Laporta's out there and Jamo and Saint, and you see the way that they're being like moved around the field. Like I was watching one play, and I don't know how much I'll go into this because I know we're not supposed to talk too much about details, but it's like Saints starting on the left, he's shifting behind Jamo on the right, or you have Laporta doing the same and going the opposite way. Right. And all of a sudden he's like kind of going out for what looks like a swing pass almost, and then might do a screen out of that. Like there's so many different ways that you can use all these weapons, and they really form together, you know, like pretty well when you look at the collection of their skills and how it all blends together with, you know, Laporta and Saint being able to do damage over the middle, with Jamo being able to stretch the field vertically, with Tesla being able to do some of the same things and being a big body receiver, and then Gibbs, his versatility out of the backfield. Like the defense is going to get tested just by all the looks and how you have a now, I would say, two offensive minds in both Petsing and Kafka, who can put defenses in conflict at the way that they've been doing it. We all saw that Giants game last year when, you know, Jameis Winston, No Malik Nabers, no Cam Scataboo, like none of these guys were out there. No Jackson Dart, obviously. And they still put up 27 and had all these trick plays. And I think you bring in a guy like Mike Kafka because of his creativity and the ideas he can bring to the table while being able to work with, you know, anybody that he's around. Like he's a collaborator in the truest sense. And then with Petsing, if you can bring in the eye candy and the disguising, but making it look similar in different ways, like when you have all that working together, it almost gives you the Ben Johnson. It just takes two guys to get you there. And I think that's like kind of the idea. If it's like, hey, if I can't get Ben, if he's gone, let me get a guy that, you know, kind of learned the game through Ben's eyes a little bit in Petsing. And let's bring in a guy like Kafka, who's a young guy, can relate to Jared Goff. He's a former quarterback himself, comes from this West Coast principle, and can bring in ideas and creativity that was really lacking when Ben left to go to Chicago. I think that was something we all saw. The trick plays just weren't the same last year. And I don't want to put that all on John Morton, but, you know, having a guy that can, you know, bring in a fresh set of eyes, I think it's going to do wonders for this offense. So I liked what I saw. It wasn't much, but in terms of what they're doing to like install what they want to do later in the summer, I think we saw kind of the foundation being laid.
Well, and you mentioned Kafka and those trick plays, Colton. One of the parts of his interview process was reviewing the game film of Lions Giants last year and explaining to Campbell and others his thought process on every play, including all of those trick plays. You know, he said, we had a few up our sleeve that day that we wanted to get to in certain moments when the defense gave us the look we were looking for. And so I would imagine that went a long way in sort of demonstrating to Campbell and the rest of the coaching staff, maybe even Brad Holmes, if he was in those meetings, the creativity that he can bring to the offensive table. And then just briefly with the benefit of trimming down the offense, I don't want to harp too much on last year and what John Morton was or wasn't doing, but I found it pretty interesting this week when it was Tesla who said the biggest difference from last year to this year, at least at this point in the calendar, is that we're just nailing the basics before we start adding on stuff. And he said there were times last year, granted he was a rookie, where we were thrown a lot and we had to sift through it and figure it out. And the subtext there was that, like, at times we were kind of confused. And I think Dan has made it a point, along with Drew, to David Shaw, to simplify the offense, to get back to the things that they do well, and you know, in hopes they can reestablish their sort of physical and dominating demeanor on offense this year, along with the creativity that Ben Johnson brought, you know, 22, 23, 24.
I think the people want to know,
Colton, if you've got I was curious if, and maybe Colton can look this up while someone else is talking, but just Lions motion rates over the last couple of years. I feel like we've talked about it before, but you know, I was just looking at league wide trends over the last 12 years. It's gone up. Pre-snap motions have gone up every single year. It's gone from like 37% almost to 2/3 of snaps now have pre-snap motions.
Yeah.
And you know, they used to be just used to identify man and zone, but now they're used to just create so much conflict and matchups. And so they're such a valuable weapon and resource for an offense to have.
Yeah, dude, O'Neal was saying yesterday that when he was with the Raiders back in 2020, actually under, I believe, still a John Gruden offensive philosophy, that he could feel the offenses around the league becoming more dynamic before the snap. And then he took that three-year hiatus into college, and he came back to the NFL as a Lions coach in 2024. And in his words, he was like, dude, it's every play. Like every offense, every play is showing some kind of eye candy before the snap. To answer your question, Jaraj, I actually wrote about this today, and I looked up just the Lions pre-snap motion rate last year. And look, different websites have different ways of tracking it, but at least according to Sharp Football Analysis, they were 52.2% of their plays last year used pre-snap motion, which ranked dead middle of the league. If you're curious, Ben Johnson and the Bears were, I think, sixth. They were above 60%. So, you know, that's probably a good indication of some of the trends and philosophies that Ben took with him to Chicago, and that the Lions weren't able to replace once Morton stepped in.
I feel like it really changed with McDaniel too. I mean, I know a lot of people want to talk about McVay and Shanahan, but like, it felt like McDaniel, when he got to Miami, just the speed elements that he added, you know, just kind of those full out sprint motions that, you know, really challenged teams with the offense they built. And that's fun because, you know, Chris Greer's here now too. Like, that's just another, and obviously not a coach, but a personnel guy that kind of brought a really exciting offense to life in another city.
Let's get to rookies. I'm sure people are wondering, and me myself, I know it's hard. They don't have, you know, they're not quite going full speed hitting each other with pads. So Blake Miller, you're probably, you know, you're not going to get to see the full picture until training camp, but still Blake, Derek, Jimmy Roeder, I saw had an interception on Teddy Bridgewater. He's out there making some plays. Keith Abney, I know Kendrick Law tore his ACL, but you got guys that are rookies participating in minicamp. Is there anyone that has stood out to you, or just in general? We'll kind of go through each of the rookies and kind of give your own evaluation.
I realize that it's padless right now. 7-on-7 reps allow you to kind of focus on one thing, but you know, when consuming Roeder's Michigan tape, I felt like this was a downhill player. He had that kind of aspect of his game down pretty well, fairly advanced given the limited experience. And then you just watch the zone coverage reps and he'd be lost and confused and slow to his spot and a lot of pre-snap problems. And to see him make some plays in coverage, to be in the right spot, the interception was really, really impressive, to kind of make the adjustment to his drop depth and to fully extend and make that grab. Like, I'm really encouraged by kind of what I saw from Roeder in these practices. And look, I think that's Malcolm Rodriguez's job to lose. And I think the Lions are grateful to have Rodriguez to kind of bridge this gap following, you know, Anzalone's departure. That's just a guy you can trust. He can do a little bit of everything, even if it's not great in every aspect. You at least trust him to be replacement level or better. But I think Roeder might push the timeline more than I anticipated in terms of commanding a role. And again, we got to see it when the pads come on. We've got to see what it looks like when he's challenged with some of the play action looks, more of these motions. But Derek Barnes raved about him to me. He said along the lines of, this guy has a schematic understanding that rivals Jack Campbell's when he arrived. And that kind of blew me away. And I kind of asked Roeder, why do you think you've been able to kind of pick this up so well? And he really drew it back to Michigan. He goes, look, the scheme we played there was NFL. And, you know, he had two coaches there, one who is now the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens, two coordinators, and one who was formerly the defensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens. He said, so yes, this is complicated and more advanced, but he goes, like, at some level, I was kind of taking these advanced classes already. And so even though he only has a year's of starting experience, and even though he only has fewer than 1,000 defensive snaps, like, mentally, he's fairly advanced for a rookie. And I think that bodes well for, you know, his ability to kind of push for a role early in his career.
I think with Roeder too, like when I was watching his film, I'm like, I see a lot of Malcolm in here, as you mentioned, Justin, like a downhill, maybe, I don't want to say old school, because he did have the athletic traits to maybe make you think he could be a good zone linebacker just when he learns more of the NFL game. But yep. He can move, man. And like you see him kind of roaming the field out here, and you're just like, okay. I like what I'm seeing right now, and I know it's early and no pads or anything, but it seems like for, you know, what they drafted him to be as maybe just a depth piece right now, you know, maybe he can push to be a little bit more than that. And, you know, I'm not sure if Malcolm is the best coverage linebacker in the NFL. You know, when you lose a guy like Alex, who was, you know, so good in that role for so many years, you have some questions there. And obviously they re-signed Malcolm to, as Justin mentioned, help bridge that gap. But I think Roeder, if he can really, you know, continue showing the coaching staff that he's understanding what they're putting on his plate, I think that's the biggest thing. They want to see the mental side first before the physical kind of translates. That's something Sean Dion Hamilton was talking about the other day. He said, so what we want to see from him is a recognition, running the huddle, lining the defense up, putting his eyes in the right place. And then when he does that, you see the fruits of it in those reps where he's got those interceptions. And he said, you know, we just want to keep him on that trajectory and keep developing him as a young player. So, you know, I think it could get to a point where in training camp, maybe he can make some noise, man. Like we saw Malcolm as a rookie, just like we all see that that clip from Hard Knocks where Shep was getting on the vets in his room. Like, someone, please step up. I need
poor Jared Davis.
Yeah, man. Tough scene, right? Like I'm begging one of you vets to like, please make, like, I don't want to start this rookie, but if he's the best man on the field, I'm going to start him. So we know how Shep operates, and Sean Dion Hamilton is kind of cut from the same cloth. So I think there's a path to playing time if Jimmy continues to, you know, impress the coaching staff, which it feels like he's done so far. But he's off to a good start. And, you know, Blake Miller, we've seen out here, get a lot of the first team reps when they go to those team drills, situational stuff, late, you know, 2-minute drill type at the end of practice. So I think he's on the right track, too, just to mention him while we're on the subject of rookies. But Jimmy's the one I feel like is probably getting a lot of the buzz right now.
Dude, I really love quick, everyone. Before you. Yeah, go ahead.
Just on the Malcolm Rodriguez, Jimmy Roeder comp, right? Yeah. Like, actually, both really athletic coming out, right? Like,
yeah,
impressive agility drills. Yeah, both of them had crazy verticals. The difference is 4 inches in height. And, like, that's unfortunate. That's something you can't control, but it's very visually apparent. And there were two passes, both post patterns. Roeder went up and got it. And he looked like Isaac Tesla out there, like, just full out extension, pulling it into his body, you know, way out there, hands catch, right? And then there was another post pass that Teddy Bridgewater, same throw, dropped it over Malcolm Rodriguez. And it was a beautiful throw. Maybe one that Roeder doesn't get his hands on either, because it was just such a well-placed ball, but it was the same route, same throw. Roeder makes the pick. The other one goes for a 20-yard completion. And so that's really the difference to me. I think they both, again, play what's in front of them very well. They both seem to have high football IQ, high instincts. I mean, Rodriguez is probably a little bit more advanced there just because of the experience and all that, but at Roeder's coverage ceiling feels so much higher just because of the size and the length.
For sure.
Yeah, I was going to mention those same two plays. I'm glad you did. I love how in that Hard Knock scene, by the way, that everyone in the room caught strays, even Rodrigo. I don't want to start this scrub, but I'm going to have to. <It's> like, yeah, hell, coach. I thought I was doing a good job, coach. I was going to mention Roeder as one of the rookies catching my eye, too, but you guys have covered that. I'll bring one up that, Jeff, I know you had mentioned, I think, on your show at some point this week, Anthony Lucas, who could be an undrafted rookie that starts making some noise when the pads come on to camp. Already making some noise in some ways this week, getting into the grill of Devin Cochran twice in a walkthrough, which is kind of unheard of on Tuesday, and eventually throwing hands with Cochran before some of the coaches had to step in and separate them. But I think it was last week when Dan was talking about sort of their revamped room of edge rushers and how they've added more size, length, and athleticism on the perimeter, that, you know, you mentioned obviously Wanham and Peyton Turner and Derek Moore, and he threw Lucas's name in there, I think maybe even before Derek Moore's, for what it's worth. And he's like, hey man, this pup Lucas. And obviously they're intrigued by the traits, and the production in college left a lot to be desired. That probably explains more than anything else why he wasn't drafted. His three sacks last season were the first three of his college career, and he was in college for 4 years. But 6'5 frame, 7 foot wingspan, and, you know, some serious power. Like, he's not going to win with speed and explosiveness. Most of the scouting reports knock him for that, but they do say, you know, if he can learn to leverage his length to win with force, you know, he's got an NFL future. He feels like, to me, he might be a good, you know, stash and develop on the practice squad guy, and the right coaching staff could maybe coax some more production out of those traits. But I did catch up with him yesterday just to ask him mostly about the practice fight in a walkthrough, because I didn't even know that was a thing. So I couched him with a couple of questions about his background and, you know, how he feels coming into the NFL. But really, I wanted to get down to what happened, dude? Like, how are you throwing the hands and walkthroughs with Devin Cochran? And I just want to read you guys his quote, because it kind of cracked me up. He was like, I play with a big chip on my shoulder, especially coming into the situation that I'm coming into. Got to make sure I'm not getting looked down upon or nothing like that. Defense is still defense at the end of the day, and we run this shit on the field. Can't let nobody try and step on us. None of that. Even if it's walkthrough. Once the offense takes it up that notch, we're going to make sure we're right on top of that. Like, y'all not going to be trying to walk over us. During the play, it's cool, but that after play shit, you really want to do it? You can. I ain't no stranger to it. So clearly he's got...
It's not that life.
Yeah, Clea, totally. You know, he's going to play with the violence that Shep likes. And look, that is a guy that when the pads come on in training camp could start to pop even more if he really can play with the power that, you know, most scouting reports seem to be high on him for. And, you know, he's like, look, I think at least he said he was over the fact that he didn't get drafted, but he didn't sound like it, and he hasn't looked like it so far, and that can be a good thing. You want guys to come into camp who are angry, who are pissed off, and as he said, who have a lot to prove. So, you know, he'll be a guy, number 61, that I certainly have my eyes on once we reconvene in July.
I can't wait till we run our training camp superlative award show, because we got a front runner for the Dan Skipper Start Shit practice fighter of the year award. I mean, but Cochran's up there too, seriously. I mean, I think he actually threw the punches, so we got two early front runners. I want to throw one more rookie in there, strictly for just benefit here. I'm very interested to see Luke Altmaier as this thing progresses, and maybe this is me not being able to shut off my fan brain, like just that third quarterback and the intrigue that they always seem to bring, even though they, you know, are likely to never amount to anything in the league. But there's something about Altmaier, man. Like, he's got zip on his ball. He's got accuracy. He's certainly got confidence. I mean, the kid has way more swagger than any third string quarterback merits having. I can't wait to kind of see what he's able to do in a preseason setting, because I feel like when they get to these situational drills, even the day Teddy Bridgewater was out, like, they're cutting practice off before he's getting those opportunities. So, he's getting reps, he's getting second team reps where he's spelling Teddy Bridgewater here and now. But like, I want to see more from Altmaier, if he can be a guy that maybe could even develop into a long-term backup option once, you know, Teddy's done.
Will you feel the same way when they go get Brendan Sorsby in the supplemental draft?
Yeah. It'll give us something to write. That's for damn sure.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, man.
You want to bet on it? It's your prize
picks for the week. I'm good on that.
This is where we're at in June, man. Brendan Sorsby and me hyping up Anthony Lucas, man. That's where we're at.
I want to hear your Lucas take. I feel like you're high on it.
Yeah, it's actually shout out Jeremy. I was reading, I started looking more into Anthony Lucas, and I know they had an article on Pride of Detroit, and I know he took the quote from Calvin Shepard. It's actually Calvin Shepard's quote that got me more bought in, when he said the tape against LSU. You guys all heard it when he said this statistically, if you just check the box score, you wouldn't know. But if you go watch the tape, the guy held Will Campbell to his third worst PFF grade ever in a college football game. Mm-hmm. And we know what Will Campbell ended up getting drafted, and we know how great Will Campbell was. So that's where it like popped my intrigue. But obviously the reporting and the measurables and stuff like that. And I'm going to be honest with you. All right. Around this time, it's about June. I always find a guy that I'm just like, that guy, I like that guy. You know, it's the UDFAs. It's always like maybe the seventh round guy. And this year I'm like Anthony Lucas, man, he's got a great story. He's got all the measurables. Let's see what can happen. And he's getting a lot of praise. I didn't even know he fist fought somebody. Honestly, the stock just went up for him, if I'm being honest.
Anthony Lucas is to you in June as Nate Borkature was to me in February. Yeah. Like, I just latch onto a guy and ride it out. And if it follows the same track as Borkature, he's going to be starting week one, brother. Yeah. He's going to be out there on the edge across from Hutch. But just to round off that Shep quote, he went on to say that after watching the film from that game, he was like, how did we get this guy undrafted? And then Casey Rogers, the D-line coach, said a version of the same thing yesterday. He said, you know, when we got him, I was looking at his film and I was like, there's no way this guy should be available in free agency. So look, there's definitely a layer of coach speak baked into that based on a guy that they have high hopes for. But intriguing to hear two defensive coaches say pretty much the exact same thing about a guy that, you know, might have a chance at a premium position to make some noise or more noise in training camp.
I love that Anthony Lucas showed up to the combine looking like a professor. That dude was just Clark Kenting.
Totally.
You take this demeanor and you just throw it in the trash. That guy no professor.
Nah, he's no joker.
Those glasses are diabolical. The ones I just saw on there, man. Shout out Anthony. Anthony Lucas in those glasses.
The eyebrows give away the evil intent, though. I got it.
Totally. Not fooling anyone, Anthony.
Yeah, no. Hey, by the way, Anthony, if you're watching, I don't want no problems. I don't want no problems.
Me neither, bro.
I didn't say nothing.
About that action.
Let's take a break. I'll tell you about our friends over at Prize Picks. We'll get back talking some Lions minicamp, get to the assistant coaches here. But let me pull up what I got for you guys. Okay, it's the off season. We're getting ready for the season. I'm going to put this on the screen so you guys can see. Let's get this. All right. And boom. Okay. You can't really see it. I know it's a little hard to see me make it zoom in, but it's a little off the angle. But I'll just read off the two in the corner here. We're going more on Amon-Ra St. Brown's receiving yards. His line is at 1,199.5. Okay. He's gonna smack that. So we're going more on that. And Sam Laporta, and this isn't because Ian Rappaport came out and said he expects him to set the market, you know, reset the market. We're going more on the touchdowns. 4.5 touchdowns from Sammy Lapatz. He's gonna clear that. And you guys can tail these picks. You play $5, you get $50 instantly. All you got to do is use the code HMA. You can tail my picks. You can have your other picks, whatever you like. So shout out to Prize Picks as always for sponsoring the show. Now let's get back to Lions offseason minicamp talk. So
sorry, Jeff, real quick. Yeah, Garage, Colton, this might predate you, but to see those picks, I almost found myself doing the Campbell. Remember that after Monday Night Football? And like week two of his first season, he was just like staring into the camera.
Yeah, there was a
throwback 2021.
By the way, the Campbell skirt quote. Put that one in the folder. He's got he's got all tires for him. So another one.
I need our guy Paul to take a screenshot of put on the Twitter account expeditiously.
But yo, find Campbell's too. Give me a side by side. Go back into the files. Find the archives.
Did Rappaport really carry that kind of water and say Laporta was gonna set market? Man, these national writers have no shame.
Clip that, Paul.
Gladly.
Like if Ian Rappaport,
that's rough. By the way, like Sam Laporta, a great player, but are we really saying that the guy coming off back injury is going to get $20 million a year? Like, really? I don't know, man.
Was this recent?
I didn't see it.
So new to me. I'll give you part of my fault. Okay, and I'm under this umbrella. If Ian Rappaport says water's wine, I'm getting drunk off water. Okay, I'm drinking all of it, dude. Okay, because this is the information I'm over here going. Ian Rappaport said he's going to reset the market, but then you really think about it, and you're like, wait, no, he is not. There's no way Brad would give that man $20 million. There's just no way. So, I don't know where he got that from. I think that was just the old, he's up for an extension, probably going to reset the market. with no information.
He's definitely going to check in that $15 to $17 million range. Like, he's going to be a top five guy. I just don't know, like, I don't know if he's going to really threaten the McBride tier. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I feel like we also heard Dan the past week say for the first time, like, without any equivocation, that, like, yeah, they would like to see these guys healthy, Branch included, before giving them an extension. I don't know if he was referring directly to Laporta or Beebe, but he made that pretty clear for the first time. And, you know, I think when we had asked Brad about that, he was sort of non-committal either way. But from Dan's response, felt like, yeah, they definitely want to make sure these guys are right before they commit that kind of money to them. And that's sensible.
It's always responsible. I don't know why Brad said it otherwise. I mean, obviously they have access to all the medical reports and all that, but, like, I if I'm investing in a guy, I need to see him do football stuff. Like,
Unless you want to sign for 10% of your market value and give us that kind of discount. Yeah, we're gonna need to see you run around a little bit, big boy.
well, Ian Rapoport said it, so that's the only evidence I have. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Let's get to the assistant coach takeaways, guys. We got to hear from all the coaches. I know you mentioned earlier Will Casey Rogers, which that was a great bit, by the way. But there's a ton of assistant coaches that kind of spoke there. Got to hear from Mike Kafka as well. It was great to hear from him finally. But what are some of your takeaways getting to speak to some of those coaches, guys?
Someone fire away. I feel like I covered the assistants in my opening monologue.
I'll go to Shea Townsend. I thought his scrum was pretty interesting. You know, obviously there's been a lot of talk about the Lions playing more nickel. You know, Shep's been pretty open to us about that. I was kind of curious, how does that look like from, you know, DeShay's, you know, point of view as DB's coach here? And, you know, one thing he kept kind of pointing to was the run game. He said, you know, it's probably a little bit more in the run game when you kind of sacrifice a bigger linebacker for, you know, a DB on the field. He says, typically when we rolled out nickel, we were sure it was heavy pass. Like, we were basically pretty certain that it was going to be a passing situation. We said, but for now, if we're going to play more nickel, those guys have to be more in tune with the run game. He said, you know, opposing offense are probably going to try to attack us with, you know, the play action off of it. And so we need like a guy that can has, I guess, good eyes, you know, won't be fooled too much, but can also come up and tackle. And we know that's kind of a prerequisite to play on this defense. Their DBs have to be able to tackle and hit. But that's kind of the focus for him right now, is finding the right fit. The guy that can cover, a guy that can hit, a guy that can run, kind of do it all. Now there are different ways to go about that. Like, you know, obviously this offseason, we were talking a lot about Kyle Lewis as maybe a hybrid type that can play some safety, play some linebacker. I'm still going to point him out.
I was too. Guilty.
I'm not off that train yet, boys.
Hey, you got Eric Hunter, 5 years from now. You will like it.
Yeah. Right. When he signs here in 5 years, man. You're right here first. But, you know, there are different ways to go about that nickel position. You can have, like, you know, a hybrid type. You can go with like more of a cover corner or a smaller guy like a Meek. Like, there are different ways to kind of play off that, but or Brian Branch, who is the ultimate nickel. Like, I don't know if that's going to be the role for him when he comes back. They obviously like him at safety, but the ultimate nickel for a lot of these like top defenses around the league is a guy that can hit like a linebacker, can blitz, can kind of be this sort of chess piece in the middle of the defense. And so the Lions have some options. Obviously, like, if you're not putting Branch there, you're not going to get like that full impact, but you can go with a cover corner. You can go with a guy that can hit a little bit more. You can kind of rotate in and out based on what the offense is showing you and what you think that the ways you think they're going to attack you going into a week. So I think Justin mentioned this earlier, but like having the flexibility to kind of play off of different guys' strengths, I think is going to be probably a bit more of a point of emphasis this year. I think last year they're pretty set in their ways. Like, even as DeShay mentioned, like, you know, last year when we rolled out nickel, we were pretty sure it's heavy pass. Maybe you just play more nickel because you want to play more nickel. You know, maybe you think that that's what's best for that week, and you kind of play it like that instead of just being so like stingy in your ways. That's kind of the mindset I'm getting from Shep. Even I think he's kind of the one maybe preaching that, is like, we have to be adaptable to what defense or opposing offenses are throwing at us. That seems to be the biggest difference. But I liked hearing some of those like takeaways, like, you know, we want to play more nickel because, you know, we look at the top five defenses in the league and, you know, we want to adopt some of those principles while still staying true to ourselves. I think that's like a good way to approach it. You don't want to just be like, what we're doing is working, when it clearly wasn't last year. Yeah. But you also don't want to get away from everything that got you here. And, I guess the guys that have been playing here for a while, you don't want to throw all that away. So probably a good mix of kind of, you know, that offseason review and kind of the takeaways they learned from that.
Yeah, it made sense to me when Deshae said that, reflecting on the two guys they signed this offseason who could be nickels. Like if they're going to try and play nickel in more than just obvious passing downs, it would make sense that they would sign a player like Christian Izian, who has like the stoutness, the thickness to make plays in the run game if he's playing nickel. And Roger McCreary, who, while he's obviously lighter and leaner than Izian, will tell you firsthand one of the things that he does at best, maybe the single thing he does best on the football field, is make plays in the backfield against the run. So Townsend's comments, you know, dovetail and jibe with the sort of potential nickels that they added, at least in free agency this offseason.
Hear me out, fellas. Brian Branch gets healthy. Kirby's playing. How about Chuck Clark out there in a 3-DB package?
Ooh,
you slide Branch down to the nickel. You let him cover the tight end, and you keep Chuck in that strong safety role. And I don't know. Like, I feel like that's a really good defensive look of kind of strength, but also coverage ability and clearly communication.
It's where you want to put your best, like, impact player, I think. That's, like, kind of the modern way that these defenses are building.
Yeah.
You put your best.
Yeah, the Witherspoon.
Right. Witherspoon or, you know, even Worry. Like, they're guys all around the league when you look at the top defenses. As Shep pointed out himself, like, a lot of these defenses have a dude at nickel. So it's like, we have a dude, and we can put him at nickel. He's done it before at a very high level. Now, I guess, do you think he's more impactful at safety or nickel? That's the question. I would say nickel. So if they can get good safety play from Chuck Clark or someone else next to Kirby, assuming that he can get back to where he was. Now all of a sudden you're talking about a very scary defense. And I think you can almost play like you were last year when you were playing heavy 4-3 and heavy base, but except the third linebacker, maybe the Alex Anzalone role in this kind of scenario is Brian Branch. And you can put him more in the box. You can move him out on the field just based on the defense or defense you want to play or the offense you're playing that week. Like just make it versatile in that sense. And I think that's something that Shep is probably more in tune with this year than he was last year, because he has a full year of experience under his belt. He's seen how opposing offenses are trying to attack his defense, and he's trying to adjust from that.
Yeah. The only thing that gives me pause with that vision, and I think I've mentioned this here before, is that when we asked Shep at the combine, is Brant someone who could fit that Eamon Worry role as sort of a hybrid nickel linebacker? His response was, I see Brian Branch as one of the best safeties in the NFL, one of the best safeties that I've ever been around. Now that felt more like, to me, stubborn, maybe year one coordinator Shep. And there's a chance that, you know, he will evolve that thinking entering this season and see a broader, different role for Brian Branch. Because I agree with you guys. If you can play him a little bit closer to the line and more of a roving role, he's got a serious chance to make an impact. One assistant coach takeaway that I'll note was from Hank Fraley. So I didn't realize that Hank Fraley coached Cade Mays at the Senior Bowl when Mays was coming out of college, 5 years ago now. That was Fraley's first exposure to him then. And, you know, he caught Fraley's eye at the Senior Bowl, just in their conversations off the field, but also Fraley watching him on the field. And then Fraley said, as you would expect him to say now, given the fact the Lions have signed him, that he was really, really impressed with his tape at Carolina. And, you know, Cade Mays is a real intriguing piece of this offense. You know, we all feel like they've made an upgrade there. And there's a chance that as the year progresses, that upgrade could be, you know, an even bigger one than it looks like right now. I still think across the board, the coaches see Cade Mays as an ascending player. But already on tape, Fraley said, you know, what you see is that he's stout at the point. He's playing physical. He keeps the depth of the pocket. And, you know, those were three things that definitely wobbled with Graham Glasgow as last season wore on. So, you know, inserting Mays in at center, definitely, to me anyways, is an immediate floor lifter, but it you know, has a chance to be also a ceiling lifter as the year goes on.
I don't know if I could handle being coached by Tashard Choice. I think it would wear me down mentally. That this dude kind of builds his whole profile around telling you everything you do wrong, and I think it takes a certain running back to handle that, but I think they do have a lot of guys in the room that can handle that. I love talking to the guy. I love kind of hearing that, about that approach. But I was pretty fascinated hearing kind of the onus that Jahmyr Gibbs is taking on, right, as now falling into this bell cow role following the departure of Dave Montgomery. And obviously Pacheco was brought in, and Vaki, they're going to try to squeeze into to a role here. But I like hearing kind of the seriousness that Gibbs has taken. And I again, Choice is just a great quote. He said, when the head coach tells you he's giving you the keys, you have this responsibility for everybody in the organization, every fan, every kid that's a Detroit Lions fan. And we hear from him that Gibbs do an MMA training, which he kind of applied to pass blocking, which again is not something you think about given the immense dual threat ability. The pass protection is kind of an afterthought, but to hear that it's important to him, and then he's working on those things, the hand placements, the balance, to get better in a deficient area of his game, to be on the field even more, I think it's just, you know, you want your best players to be your hardest workers. You hear that cliche all the time. And I really feel like Gibbs has fallen into that mold very much in the same way that Amon-Ra St. Brown is that guy. And I don't think it's a coincidence that those guys are pretty close in the locker room and pretty close off the field. And that's who he's doing the MMA training with, right? Like, he's flying out to California to work out with Amon-Ra St. Brown. And that's, you know, nothing but good vibes for that situation, for this organization, for the fan base.
Justin, you coming around on Vaki a little bit at all?
Hey.
He's been out there with the first team. He's been getting some reps, man. I don't know.
Hey, you're just going to check in Detroit Football Network, read my story when I write about him later this week. No. I think what we're seeing is kind of the vision for what they had for him last year, right? Like, this was what we saw in OTAs last year, was he was doing some of this first team backfield stuff, splitting out in the slot, out wide, some two running back stuff. And then, you know, what was it first? The hamstring, and then it converted into a groin injury, compensatory thing kind of as the season progressed. Like, it just, everything they had planned for him, not to mention coordinator change and all that, it all got tabled, right? And so I will not forget Will's bold prediction, because I thought it was bold, very, very bold, the boldest of our bold predictions.
That a boy, Will. Let's go.
What do we got for Vaki? What's the count?
One of my
seven
bold predictions. It was just a needless.
It's just a general thing. Observation.
General observation.
Like a general thought. I don't know.
Yeah.
Look, I think Jared Goff winning MVP would have been less bold. That's how far I'm going to go with Vaki being. What's the guy got? Seven offensive snaps. But like, I remember talking to him as a rookie, and I said, "How long is it going to take you to feel comfortable running back?" And he goes, "About 3 years." And I'm like, "All right." It's very self-reflective and honest. Like, it's been 3 years. Like, it's time. And
I would have lied if I were him. I don't think he's a reporter.
I don't think you're capable of lying when you're born in Utah or live in Utah. It's just the rule, right? There's only 3.4% beer. You can't cover it up.
Yeah.
So I'm very intrigued by Vaki. I'm curious to see how that develops early in the season through training camp, and really, like, can he show signs that he is capable of overtaking Pacheco as the number two back as the season progresses? I'm still doubtful, but the ceiling is higher with Vaki, and so let's see where it goes.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Get out of here. Get out of here.
Colton, honestly, that was kind of a diabolical move, though, by Vaki. Honestly, he should have been like, I'm going to need at least 13 years here to figure this thing out. So you can't possibly come back to me before that. Yeah.
Just extend me another 4 years, and then, like, we'll have a conversation after year eight, and, you know. Yeah.
I'm telling you, Will, and I'll say this, shout out, a proud sponsor, Dog and Pony Show Brewing. By the way, use the Lions Collective, go in there, get $1 off beer.
If Vaki
ends up being a major contributor, right, I'll take care of you, Dog and Pony. All right, beer's on me. We'll go out there.
Well, that's so nice, Jeff. The thing is, Kyle already takes care of us every time we go in there. But very, very,
hey, you're not
very, nice,
to
very nice of you to offer.
I'm like, Will, I got it. I go up to Kyle. I'm like, hey, man, let's hook the boys up here. Shout out, Kyle. The best.
Bro, if
the
that actually best happens, Vaki might pass his beers.
3.4% only, though.
Yeah.
Dirty sodas in Utah. Yeah.
Before we got about 10 minutes left. Before we end this show, and by the way, we were kind of slowing down a little bit in the off season. We'll pick back up closer to the season. But you guys, it's a perfect time for you guys to kind of give your thoughts on some of those position battles pre-camp. Now that minicamp's over, maybe some things you guys noticed, different position groups, maybe things to pay attention to as we approach training camp. Just some of your takeaways from some of those different positional battles.
I'm still fixated on guard, and I still believe it's Christian Mahogany's to lose. He's still taking the vast majority of first team reps, but they've been slowly working in Juice Scruggs. It's a guy that has another guy that's trending up. It's caught my eye. I think it's validated what Brad Holmes told us when we sat down with him a few months ago about how excited they were to land that guy. We're seeing him play right guard, left guard, backup center, fullback, six offensive linemen. Like they clearly want to find a way to get this guy on the field, and it might end up being starting left guard. And then we have not seen Ben Bartsch yet. I kind of expect him to be in the mix come training camp. And so I'm kind of excited to see, you know, how deep that competition goes. I know Dan's talking about Manu in the mix. I think that's probably a pretty big stretch, but I look at those three, the Mahogany, Bartsch, Scruggs kind of trifecta. You know, I think that's kind of where it'll be decided.
I think there's a pretty intriguing one at corner involving their first round pick from 2 years ago. And look, this goes all the way back to the combine. And Kelvin Shepard issued his first public challenge to Terrion Arnold. And he told us in no uncertain terms that I just need that kid to be quiet and go play. And look, when maybe the most vocal, most bombastic coordinator in the NFL is telling you you're talking too much, probably time to simmer down and just play some football. And you know, we heard it yesterday from Campbell as well, saying that look, when he gets out there on the field at full health and training camp, he's got to go earn it. And we heard it from Deshay Townsend, who said, yeah, you know, he's gonna get his job back when he gets out there, but he's got to get back out there first. And I think there's been a level of frustration over the first couple seasons with Terrion's inability to practice in full capacity on a consistent basis, even in training camp and then throughout the season. Obviously, injuries last year derailed what should have been, in my eyes, sort of his breakout season. But Campbell was also clear yesterday that the Lions are done handing out jobs to players, whether it be based on pedigree, based on prior performances, based on name. And you know, in his own words, he said they're not going to let anyone hold them hostage this season. Like, if you aren't showing enough, such a great line. If you're not going to show enough growth or development, and there's someone beneath you that is, like, we're not going to hesitate anymore to go to that guy, because as Campbell put it himself, like, it's not fair to us. It's not fair to the players. It's not fair to the coaches, anybody on the roster. And that was clearly a shift in his approach to roster construction this year that was informed by their disappointing finish last year. And to be clear, he wasn't talking explicitly or exclusively about TA, but like, he might as well have been. That's the player, along with maybe Mahogany, who most fits that description of like, yo, it's time to produce. And you know, he said, we need to see growth. We need to see development. At some point you can't wait anymore. And this is a big year for TA. I like that the coaching staff from Shep to Townsend to Campbell is laying down the gauntlet for him and telling him that if you want to be the guy that you think you are and that we still think you can be, you have to show us. Otherwise, you know, we got Ennis Rakestra, who's playing a lot with the first team defense in spring practices because you're not entirely healthy. And we got Rock Ya-Sin, who we believe in. We even have Khalil Dorsey, who's made a couple plays in camp here. And, you know, we're not going to defer to you just because you were a first round pick 2 years ago. And, you know, Campbell and TA had a long, occasionally animated conversation coming off the field yesterday before TA spoke with reporters, and TA declined to share what was said between the two of them, although it was mostly Dan talking to TA. And when TA came and spoke with us about obviously the off-field incident, but also just his mindset entering year three, one of the things he said in response to the off-field questions was sometimes it's best to remain silent. So, you know, maybe there's one example of TA taking Shep's advice, also probably his lawyer's advice. But when that scrum ended, the point I want to make here is that I pulled TA aside because he's always willing to talk more. It's one of the things that we all appreciate about him most. And I just said, look, man, most of these first round corners that, you know, that have been drafted over the past couple of years have established themselves as stars in the NFL, Pro Bowls, all pro players, whether it was Christian Gonzalez in 23, Quinyon Mitchell in 24, two picks before Terrion, Witherspoon in 23, obviously TA's podcast buddy and close friend Pat Surtain. And I asked him, you know, given the way those guys have lived up to their pedigree, is there a sense that that you want to show this year that you belong in that conversation. And, you know, he kind of deferred and said it's not about proving it, and went on to give a very TA answer. His response was, my whole focus year three is how can TA be a better player? Who is TA in competition with? TA is in competition with himself. Now, of course, TA is going to talk about himself in the third person, but the irony there is that, like, really you aren't, dude. Like, you're also in competition beginning next month with Ennis Raikstraw, with Rock Ya-Sin, with even Khalil Dorsey if he makes enough plays. And, you know, it's time for TA to win his job back and then this season prove that he can pick up where he left off before his injury last year, because it did feel like he was playing pretty good ball, especially in that Cincinnati game when he got hurt. He felt like he was playing his best ball yet, but, you know, that's now what? It'll be 10 months ago when this season kicks off, and he's going to have to get back on that level quickly or the Lions won't be afraid to potentially make a change.
I love that Haas's comment from Dan, because to me it like kind of like emphasizes everything that he's been talking about in terms of competition and like,
yeah,
we're really going to go hard in training camp, so you better be ready. Like, no free jobs this season. Like, that's kind of the mindset that he's coming into training camp with, and he's already had it in OTAs and minicamp. And so to hear that, I was just like, he's sending a message to all these dudes, whether you're a draft pick that, you know, probably doesn't deserve a roster spot, but you've been getting one in the past because, you know, we got to protect our investment, or you're, you know, a high draft pick or a young guy that, like, we've given jobs to just out of necessity, like Mahogany and Terrion. Like, we brought in guys to push you, and like, your job is not secure. And if you think it is, buddy, good luck. You'll find out in about 6 weeks here. So I love that.
Find out.
Yeah, for real. I love that from Dan, man. I really did. And like, I think for a player like Terrion, some, you know, players are pushed in different ways, and they, you know, are, you know, I guess they are motivated in different ways. And for a guy like TA, you know, you go back to his Alabama days, like, he was benched. He was benched by Nick Saban. And I think Eli Ricks, you know, won a job over him, or, you know, maybe he was benched in favor of Ricks at some point while he was at Bama. And he had to go win the job back and fight and scratch and claw for everything he got. And to his credit, he did it, and he turned himself back into a first-round pick. And, you know, when he first got to the Lions, out of necessity, they had to put him out there as a rookie. They had to put him out there as a sophomore. And, like, he was never really challenged in a meaningful way. He just had that job kind of to start, really. And so that's not the case this year. And I think that can really maybe create this opportunity for him to rise to the occasion if he puts all the offseason headlines and everything else behind him, the injuries behind him, because he is a talented player. But, you know, some guys just need to be pushed in different ways. And, you know, I think the Lions might have been loving on their guys a little too much, and now it's time to, like, push them into the deep end and be like, all right, man, sink or swim. Like, it's time. We're going to put all this competition around you. We'll see if you can rise to the occasion. When we see those guys out there for walkthroughs, which Terrion has been participating in when he's been on the field, you know, they split them up in the two fields. I know Dan said not to read too much into it, but I always call it the varsity field and the JV field. So in the varsity field, you got the starting offense, the starting defense. And on the JV field, you have a lot of the reserves and young guys and UDFAs trying to, like, work their way up the ladder. And Terrion has been on that JV field for, you know, all of OTAs and all of minicamp. And so we've seen Ennis Raikstraw, like, later in practice kind of get moved to the varsity and play it in those team drills with the starting defense. But, you know, Terrion hasn't been a part of that because of the injury. But even the fact that he's out there and they're putting Khalil Dorsey and Rock Ya-Sin over there with the varsity squad, they're trying to send him a message and say, look, man, we know you're not 100% right now, but your job is not secure. You got to fight and scratch and claw for it just like you were at Bama. And, you know, I think they're hoping that that gets the best out of him. But, you know, he's got to come out and perform when he's healthy enough to be out there for those full team periods. And if he doesn't, they've got depth to replace him if they really want to. They really like Rock Ya-Sin. They've got Ennis working into that first team defense on occasion, and he's healthy now. So it's like, now's the time, man, to prove that you're the player that we thought you could be. And if you're not, then we'll just move on. Again, we're not letting anyone hold us hostage right now. And I think that's the perfect message for this group and some of these guys and where they're at in their careers.
And Colton, to Terrion's credit, I thought he had a pretty refreshing and thoughtful perspective on it. He said, if you don't have coaches who are going to go out there trying to find guys to replace you or to push you, it's not going to get the best out of you. So I think that message has been sent, and I think for Terrion, it's been received.
Absolutely. I agree.
I think you guys bringing this up just highlights, to me, coming out of this stage OTA, is like the weakness of the roster, or the most concerning area of the roster, and it's cornerback to me. It's Terrion being pushed. Can Ennis stay healthy? And I know kind of this narrative here that DJ had his explosion back, but I kind of felt like he got worked in some of these drills by I mean, not difficult to get worked by Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams, but I thought he lost more than his fair share of those matchups. And I get it. Again, pads not on, running against, you know, guys where you can't press them and, you know, lean into some of your strengths. But I think they have big question marks to answer, you know, come training camp at cornerback.
Totally fair.
Yeah, I like that.
We'll get out of here. Appreciate you guys. Big shout out to our sponsors, Dog and Pony Show Brewing. Our guy Kyle, by the way, mentioned Lions Collective. Get $1 off your beer. So go get some beer. It's delicious. We were there, what, 2 weeks ago or a week ago? I can't remember. I had too much beer, but it was great.
I might be there tomorrow. And go see a World Cup game tomorrow.
There you go. World Cup's tomorrow. So go check it out. It's been packed in there.
Whatever it is.
And then Prize Picks as well. Shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring the show. We'll catch you guys on our next episode. Not next week, though. What are we doing? Next would be in July, I believe.
I think we're taking a little bit of a summer hiatus here. Probably pop back in right before training camp. Wednesday before training camp. Sound about right?
Our listeners need it, too. You know, everyone's got to just detach from Lions for a little bit.
There you go. We'll catch you guys. Much appreciated. You guys in the chat, hit the like button, subscribe, and continue to show support. We'll catch you guys until we go live next. Peace.